to First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That is Bart Scott in for
what up, man?
Carter
Bart
today.
Carter.
Here right is.
How are you doing?
Is Nick Wright. Thanks so much for being with us.
Good to see you.
Chris is taking a little holiday time, but we love having you here. We got a big Labor Day show for you today. Tom Brady and the Patriots are now poised to win Super Bowl number 7. Speaking of Brady, Aaron Rodgers planning to play till he's 45. And the Zeke drama in Dallas, which appeared to be winding down, is apparently ramping up. Bart, any reason to bet against the Patriots heading into this season?
I'm done betting against the New England Patriots.
We all are.
It's like mentally exhausting. This is a deep roster right here. I think the best defensive team that he's had in a long time. I think they're going to take a lot out of his plate this year. They're going to be able to win ugly. They can win in a shootout. We know that. And they cut Demaryius Thomas, but we know after week one they're going to bring him back. So now they have tremendous depth at the wide receiver's position. You know, they have a full array of running backs. They're a complete team. The only thing that can derail this team is an injury to to Tom Brady or more injuries to that offensive line that protects them.
The offensive line, though, is, I don't want to say a huge concern, but a question mark more so this year.
A lot of transactions this week.
Absolutely. And the center, who had been one of the standard bearers of that offensive line, he now officially out for the year. The left tackle, Isaiah Wynn, might have liked him a lot coming out of college, but it's not just that we've never seen him play in the pros. It's that he's gone now, pardon me, a year without playing, or 9 months without playing football coming off that Achilles injury. But the real reason to bet against the Patriots has nothing to do with the Patriots and everything to do with the team they'd have to go through. The Kansas City Chiefs are the best team in the AFC this year.
Shady.
And the best team in the NFL this year. Adding LeSean McCoy is a little bit of a bonus, but even prior to adding LeSean McCoy, this is a team that last season played the Patriots twice. In both of those games, they were miserable in the first half. Outscored 38 to 9, doing the math in my head, in the first half. And in the second half of those games, they scored 31 points and 31 points. In the regular season game against the Patriots, Patrick Mahomes led 2 fourth-quarter comebacks, only to have the defense give it up. In the playoff game against the Patriots, Patrick Mahomes led 3 fourth-quarter comebacks, only to have the defense give it up. He then took it back again or tied it, and then they lose a coin flip and lose the game. I think the Chiefs improved more this offseason than the Patriots did. I think the Chiefs last year were as close as one could get to the Patriots without actually beating them. And if you read Peter King this morning, he had talked to Patrick Mahomes and Andy Reid about those games against the Patriots. And Mahomes said what is absolutely correct. We have to make adjustments before halftime. They were great at halftime adjustments. He said against New England, we have to recognize we've got to start out faster and make adjustments earlier. If the Chiefs do one or both of those things, they will be in far better position this year than last year. So it's not an anti-Patriots play. More so, I think they would have to go through the best team in the NFL, and that's the Kansas City Chiefs.
Well, but when you talk about that, it's important where you play that game as well.
Yep.
Not so much for the Patriots, but really for Kansas City. And last year, they played that game at home and lost. And who has the tougher role to get there? They got to go through, the Chargers as well.
Broncos
and the Broncos a little bit better, so they could get beat up. We think the Jets are going to be a little bit better. Why the Buffalo Bills are helping the Patriots become a better football team by sending them offensive linemen, I have no idea. But we think the road to the AFC Championship is going to be a little bit easier for the Patriots because they're always able to walk through the regular season.
Yep.
So it's going to be important. You know, they brought in Steve Spagnuolo, which is huge because he's one of the few coordinators that have had success against them. They bring in Frank Clark. They're going to have to be able to slow him down. The big part that the biggest, I believe, hurdle that the Patriots are going to have is finding a way to replace Gronkowski, because it wasn't so much his big plays against Eric Berry in those games. It was really his blocking and being able to secure the edge.
It's another
Ben
offensive line question.
Be able to do that. Right. So we're going to see how the Patriots adjust with that. Do they go back to the traditionally what they used to be, spreading you out and running power, runs out of,
passing formations.
That's something that they've always been good at adjusting to, because they do have a guy like Demaryius Thomas, who's a guy, if you put in a slot, is a mismatch problem against a nickel or they can put the young kid in there, Neil and Harry. N'Keal Harry, and he can be somebody that acts as that big tight end slash, dime, nickel killer.
You talk about adjusting. You talk about the Chiefs not adjusting at halftime. There's no team in the NFL that adjusts to everything, to injuries, to guys not being able to play, to suspensions, to seeing what defenses show them than the Patriots. This is a team that they know who they are now. They know they're going to be a different team at the end of the season, and not every team can adjust to that. A lot of teams go into the season as favorites and assume that's their mentality and their thought process throughout. The Patriots go week to week, and they're so good about being able to sort of maintain that thought process, and Belichick is great at doing that. All right, so if it is the Patriots if it's not the Patriots, I seem to think it is. Both of you don't. Are you going
with the
Chiefs?
Well, I think Bart does. I think Bart does think it's going to be
the Patriots. You still think, even though, that the Patriots will win the Super Bowl?
Well, still, no, not win the Super Bowl. I think they'll go to the Super Bowl. I think I've been just watching all the transactions this weekend, and to me, I believe that it's the New Orleans Saints. You look at what they've been able to add over the weekend, bringing in Kiko Alonso, being able to add more speed at that second level. If it's one person I trust to go throw for throw, play for play, it's Sean Payton and Drew Brees. So I think that they'll be able to pull it out, because they just have so many explosive weapons that I feel like they can be able to exploit that Patriots defense. Even though it's good, Drew Brees is somebody I never count against.
Well, that's interesting that you said the coach quarterback combo that you trust most to go up against Belichick is Peyton and Brees. For me, that's one of the reasons I'm so high on the Chiefs. I think the Chiefs are going to go to the Super Bowl. Obviously, I think they're going to win. They have right now in 2019, people get mad, but it's obviously true, a better quarterback than New England. And nobody is a better coach than New England. But I think Andy Reid might be the closest thing to it, as far as a guy who's been in Kansas City now for long enough. It's his full roster of players, his system, his coaching
staff.
Never
won a big game.
I don't know. It's fair to say he never won a big game. Won a conference championship game. That was a pretty big game. Then they lost in the Super Bowl to the New England Patriots. I would argue, though, that Patriots team, when they played in the Super Bowl 15 years ago, that was maybe the best of all the Patriot teams. That Patriot team was dominant, was stacked. That was the team that during that run reeled off at the time record for most consecutive wins over the course of, if you combine two seasons, essentially. Andy Reid was coaching with one hand tied behind his back a bit in that game, and the Pats clearly had more talent, and his best player, Terrell Owens, was injured. But again, nobody's Bill Belichick. But if I'm going to trust a team to beat the Patriots in New England or in Kansas City, they played in New England last year in the regular season. And after playing terribly in the first half, the Chiefs had a fourth quarter lead, and the defense just couldn't hold on to it. The other thing for New England that I think is a legitimate concern is, what offense are they going to run? Because we had said they were going to be the team they were the final month of the season, that power running team, two tight ends. Well, right now, Gronk's gone. Two tight ends are suspended. So their starting tight end at the moment's a guy named Ryan Izzo. They took in the seventh round last year. So at least the beginning of the season, that
might go to Pro Bowl.
Okay, sure. But that might not be an option to them. We know they don't have the center. We talked about that earlier. And your point on the Saints, and you can speak on this better than me, but how much emotional fatigue is there from consecutive years feeling like this was our year, this was our opportunity? 2 years ago, you feel like it got blown because your safety just made one really bad play. And the next year, it's even worse, because rightly or wrongly, they don't feel like they blew that game. They feel like that game was stolen from them.
So you're telling me they got a chip on their shoulder?
A chip on their
And now they just got better. Tell me this, better offense, Saints, Kansas City?
Oh, I think Kansas City.
Close.
Yeah, absolutely.
Better defense.
Saints. The Saints definitely have a better defense.
And a coach that's willing to make the big decision in the big moment. Don't forget what Sean Payton did in the Super Bowl. It takes a lot
of... Was it your issue that Drew Brees wouldn't have it for all
I'm also concerned
season?
About Drew Brees. What we saw from him the first 12 games of last year and then the end of last year looked eerily similar to what we saw from Peyton Manning second to last year.
Load management.
Just hand the ball
Watch it happening. They got Latavius Murray. They got Kamara. They're going to load manage him. They're going to make sure they keep his throws down until play.
I think that's smart. I think they need to, because I think that is part of what happened last year. I think his arm got tired.
Tyson Hill coming in. Taysom Hill.
Yeah, they love Taysom
they
Hill.
They love him. Use him everywhere. All right, take a break. Coming up, did the Texans shake up the entire NFL this weekend? That's next on Bart says yes. The NFL is fun. got a big doubleheader to open this season. First, Washington takes on Carson Wentz in Philadelphia. Then it's America's game of the week as Saquon Barkley and the Giants take on Dak and the Cowboys with or without Zeke. Or other regional action all on Fox or the Fox Sports app. Check your local listings.
Cannot wait. Cannot believe we are doing football promos. It's for the NFL. It's this week.
Great.
Baseball's been killing
me. Time for us to go viral. All right, North Carolina took down South Carolina 24-20 in Mac Brown's debut in his second stint as the UNC head coach. Great win for a team that went 2-10 last season, but better than the win. Check Mac out after the game. What's up? How you doing?
Forever young. That's
busting
what young
out
kids, young kids
the dance
do for
moves.
You.
68 years old, man.
They're like Nick in the middle of the dance floor.
First of all, no, it doesn't. I don't appreciate
more flexible
that.
Than
second of all, good for Mac Brown, man. Nice little win about cross against their, not cross-state rivals, but their border rivals in South Carolina. After spending some time in television, was choked up after the game. Man, and it looked like they were cooked in this game.
Yeah, it did. It
little, like nice little back-to-back touchdowns to cap a comeback. Happy for Mac Brown, man.
Forever young, man. Being around young kids, around yourself with young people, keep that energy right.
Nice weekend of college football.
Oh, right. Man, a bunch of great comebacks, too.
Oh, man, that
good
Oregon
games.
Game.
Time for stories to start your morning, sponsored by Gillette Clear Gel. Heisman hopeful Jalen Hurts started off his campaign with a bang last night in his Oklahoma debut, finishing 20 of 23 with 332 passing yards, three touchdowns to go along with 176 rushing yards, and another three scores on the ground. Oklahoma took down Houston 49-31. So, Nick, should we just pencil in Lincoln Riley and the Sooners for a third straight Heisman?
Well, listen, you can't pencil them in for the Heisman yet, but damn, this is impressive.
They got a kid in Clemson.
Oh, absolutely. They got a kid in Clemson.
Two kids in Clemson.
There's a running back in Wisconsin. There's a lot going on. But what he did yesterday was absolutely remarkable. I'll be honest. I went out to dinner with my wife last night, so I was missed about the middle portion of this game. And when I get back in the car, I check Twitter, and I see someone tweet that Jalen might go for 400 and 200. And I was like, no, what? I look at the bottom. I'm like, oh, it was on the board that he was going to have 400 passing, 200 rushing, and six or seven touchdowns. As impressive of a debut as you possibly could have. And Bart, I'll tell you what I'm rooting for. Could we get Oklahoma, Alabama in the playoff? See Jalen Hurts' little revenge game?
Oh, I tell you what, he reminds me of Dak Prescott. He's pretty much like Kyler Murray within this system. This system is perfect for him because he has to prove to NFL evaluators that he can throw the football and throw the football on time. So it was important. It's all about location, location, location. And I feel like this is a perfect marriage because with all that spread offense, you're going to have a lot of man-to-man doubling, and there are a lot of defenders going to have their back turned. He's going to be able to utilize his ability to make people miss in space. This is a perfect marriage.
And nice to go against that U of H defense. That was terrible last year and looks terrible again.
Moving on to Ezekiel Elliott. Now rumors and reports were out there that the Cowboys were close to wrapping up contract talks with Zeke, but Yahoo's Charles Robinson is reporting the opposite, that the team is, quote, frustrated with the latest exchange with Zeke's camp. Bart, are we going to see Zeke in week one?
I don't think week one. I think you see him week two. Even if he got in late this week, what kind of pitch count could he be on? I think they don't fear the New York football Giants. And then you look after that, it's the Washington Redskins. I think Jerry Jones is trying to get a little leverage, saying, hey, look, we can win without you. You know, I'm willing to sit this thing out. It's about principle. I was there for you. I supported you. Show me some love back.
I think it's really interesting that as of Sunday morning, the report was they are close to consummating a deal. And then Charles Robinson, who's an excellent reporter, same reporter reported that, reported the Cowboys were frustrated with how talks had gone. So that appears to be one of those, all right, we think we're close, and then at the last second, the player's like, I want this.
Yeah.
Which, by the way, is one of my favorite negotiating tactics as well, so I don't begrudge him that, but it might cost him week one.
All right, moving on to LeSean McCoy.
At the end, asked for a little
shady
bit more.
The all-pro running back was cut by the Bills on Saturday, and the Chiefs quickly scooped in to sign Shady and reunite him with head coach Andy Reid. Nick, can Reid rejuvenate LeSean McCoy?
If anyone can, it'd be Andy Reid in that offense with that quarterback, that many weapons. But I don't think anyone should expect LeSean McCoy to be an enormous difference maker for the Chiefs. Oh, you do?
What?
I mean, listen, I think
I can see 1,800.
You think he's going to have 1,800 combined yards from scrimmage?
He can do that.
Wow.
Listen, you talk about a guy for the last couple years.
It's not 2014
anymore. He was everything in Buffalo. Now he has protection. He's the third or fourth person that you're concerned about. So you're going to give Shady listen, this dude made me miss in the whole chain and make change. This is a guy that's still very elusive. He's a guy that's a dual threat guy. He's a guy that's tough inside of the tackles, but also he still has the speed.
You had some battles with him, right?
I did.
And you're now a seasoned television pro, and he's still playing.
He's 31 years old.
Man, that's like 41
I remember Thomas Jones. I remember LT coming to us late in his career with a lot to prove. It took us to the FC
Championship. Listen, if you're right, if he gets 1,800 yards from scrimmage, the Chiefs won't lose a game all year.
He's Jamal Charles.
Oh.
All over again. He's a guy that can average 5 yards a carry.
Oh, my goodness.
He's going to be playing against the lightest box.
Oh, my goodness.
Nick, I put some money on it.
Oh, I hope you're right.
1,500.
Speaking of running backs, let's end with the Chargers, who will likely be without their Pro Bowl running back, Melvin Gordon, week one, and perhaps even longer. As Gordon continues his holdout, Chargers GM Tom Telesco said they're halting extension talks until after the season, granting Gordon permission to seek a trade. Bart Scott, how much does Melvin Gordon's holdout impact the Chargers' Super Bowl chances?
I mean, they haven't had him much throughout their whole career. He's been injured. He's only played 16 games once. This reminds me like a guy coming out of the MAC conference and going pro. He getting some bad advice because he's not in the same situation as Ezekiel Elliott. He hasn't been able to perform. He hasn't even showed that he can be healthy. They've had to play a lot of these games without him. I mean, he's played 14, 13, 16, 12. I mean, he's a guy that's a good back. I wouldn't consider him great back. I wouldn't consider him a top 10 back in this league. So he needs to understand that he has a little bit more to prove. I mean, if he goes in, you know, this year and he has a tremendous season, then he can double down and bet on himself. But he's not a $10 million plus, you know, running back in this league.
The only thing elite about his career stat line are his touchdown numbers. His last 3 years, he's averaged 13 touchdowns a year. But that seems to be more situational how they use him because he averages less than 1,000 yards. He's a good pass-catching back, but he's not an elite pass-catching back, never topping 500 yards receiving. When this happened, Jenna, we said on this show, man, it sure seems like Melvin Gordon's overplaying his hand here, that he has someone telling him your value is X and his value is X divided by 2 and he just doesn't know it. And that is how this has played out. And this is now, I don't think he has no value. I think the Chargers are better with him than without him, which is one of the reasons that I'm fading the Chargers this year. So Melvin Gordon, you don't know if you're going to have him, which while he might not be worth $10 million a year, I do believe he's better than Austin Eckler, who's their backup. The best player on their team, not named Phillip Rivers, is Derwin James. He's on the IR, so he's going to miss at least 2 months with the chance of coming back, but there's no guarantee he comes back. And one thing that I think we do poorly in sports television in general is we talk how important defense is all the time in football, how important defense is. But when a defensive player gets injured or is lost for the year, we don't put the impact on it as an offensive player does. If an offensive player on a team potentially as good as the Chargers of Derwin James's caliber was put on the IR, we would be talking about how that team's playoff chances are just kneecapped. Derwin James, like, next man up. He was an all-pro as a rookie, and people saw it coming. So the Chargers, 7-1 in one-score games last year. That tends to revert back to the mean. Melvin Gordon's uncertain. No Derwin James. I think it's bad news for a Chargers team that was a tiebreaker away from the one seed last season.
They were close, 12-4 last year. The Chargers with Melvin Gordon maybe could have been Super Bowl contenders this year.
Well, they could have, but I think they can withstand. Gus Bradley is a tremendous defensive coach. They can figure things out. Phillip Rivers can put up enough points. They can win ugly early.
I'm Sarah Kustak, and before the show moves along, here's a quick word from our friends over at the Fantasy Footballers Podcast. The NFL season is back, and that means one thing. It's fantasy football time. Dominate your league by subscribing to the number one fantasy football podcast on the planet, the Fantasy Footballers. Fantasy Footballers Podcast is the most downloaded fantasy football podcast for a reason. It has the most accurate rankings, as measured by Fantasy Pros, so you have a leg up on your competition. The Fantasy Footballers was a winner of iHeartRadio's Best Sports Podcast and have over 20 industry awards since 2015. Simply put, these guys can help you win your league and you'll be entertained in the process. Subscribe right now to the Fantasy Footballers Podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever you listen to podcasts. You can also visit them on the web at thefantasyfootballers.com. Subscribe now and dominate your fantasy football league.
All right, let's move on to the Texans now. After five seasons, the Jadeveon Clowney experiment is officially over in Houston. The team traded the three-time Pro Bowl defensive end to the Seahawks on Saturday, and Bart is applauding. In a separate move, the Texans acquired first-round left tackle Laremy Tunsil and wide receiver Kenny Stills from Miami. Nick, did Houston get better after this weekend?
Yes, they got better. They got better. They added a guy that one day might be an all-pro, like might be one of the top five tackles in football. I don't think he is yet, but one day might be. It was their biggest position of need. But the price they paid was so enormous. Like, just set the Clowney trade aside for a second. They traded two firsts and a second for Laremy Tunsil.
Yes.
The best analogy I come up with is this. The Texans, everyone's known they've needed an offensive line for 2 years now, right? So you move to a new city and you're like, I'm not going to buy a car. Everyone's like, you need a car. Now, first year on the job, I'm going to take mass transit. You're late for work all the time, almost get fired. And then you tell your friends, you're like, you know what? Finally, listen, you guys bought a car. Oh, what'd you get? I got an Acura. They're like, oh, it's a little nicer than I thought you'd get. What'd you pay? $145,000. But don't worry, for 6 months, but no money down for 6 months. So eventually, listen, the bill will come due.
Yeah.
But for the short term, poor Deshaun Watson last year had a collapsed lung, had to take bus trips instead of plane rides.
He needs an offensive line.
I get why they did it, but one of my former colleagues in Houston, former Houston Texan, Seth Payne, made this point. Like, after the housing crisis happened, and you didn't want to bail out the banks, but because of your bad decisions, you swallowed hard and did it. The Texans had to bail out Deshaun Watson because of years of bad decisions. They put themselves in a position where Miami can hold them over a barrel like this. So, yeah, they're better because they got a left tackle where they needed it. But that cost, Bart, is enormous. And that's before we even discuss just giving away Jadeveon Clowney.
I don't know about just giving him away. They got Mingo back, who's been a disappointment, but he's not a slouch. He's okay. I think we overvalue, to me, what Jadeveon Clowney is. I think sometimes we want to put him in the same category as Von Miller. We want to put him in Khalil Mack. He's not that. He's closer to Mario Williams. He's a guy that you're going to look up at the end of the year. He's going to have 9-10 sacks. I look at his career sack high. It's the same as mine as a middle linebacker. I'm not paying $150 million for that. He's a guy that's tremendous in setting the edge, and he's disruptive, but he's not getting the sacks that you want or the production that you get. Really, we see from the elite inside to interior tackles. You know, you look at the guy on this team, J.J. Watt, you look at Aaron Donald, what he gives you, he's not giving you near that type of production. So you had to let him go. And I love the fact that you're able to protect Deshaun Watson, because I think this is them being all in. And really, the move that I really like the most is Kenny Stills.
Because what happens in the Tunsil?
So Kenny Stills is one of the most electric deep threats outside of Deshaun Watson, as far as Deshaun Jackson, in a long time. And what happens is every year when you see Deshaun Watson struggle is because he loses Will Fuller.
Yep.
Will Fuller is a guy that's tremendous, that's going to stretch the field, because we know Hopkins is more of a possession type of guy. So now you're able to put in Duke Johnson, who's somebody who's a tremendous pass-catching running back. So now you have electric playmakers all around Deshaun Watson. I love it, and I love the insurance that Stills brings to this team.
All right, so a couple things. Let me talk about Clowney for a second, because I think you're a little too far down on Clowney. Clowney is an elite run defender. That doesn't show up in the sack stats.
Okay.
They also can move him all over the line. He can play every position on the defensive line. And the injury bug, which was obviously a big part early in his career.
Factor.
He's missed 3 games in the last 3 years. He seems to have gotten over that at least to a degree. But the bigger problem with the Texans is the process here. There were 3 pass rushers who were franchise tagged at the end of the season. Dee Ford, Frank Clark, Jadeveon Clowney. Frank Clark went for a first and a second. Mm-hmm. Dee Ford went for a second because they were traded before the July 15th deadline, so the teams that were trading for him could sign him to an extension. The Texans, as you often do when you don't have a general manager, could not figure out what they were doing, thought Clowney was bluffing, and they ended up trading away Clowney for 30 cents on the dollar. There was a time, I'm sure you both remember this, Al Davis passed away, and Hugh Jackson was in Oakland, and he seized that power vacuum over the franchise and started making trades as the coach to save his job. He traded a first and a second for Carson Palmer because the owner had passed and he had taken over. The owner in Houston unfortunately passed. Bill O'Brien takes over, and look at what he's done as far as incoming and outgoing since he's been the general manager. Incoming, Laramie Tunsil, Duke Johnson, Kenny Stills, a third and a fourth. Outgoing, Clowney, former number one overall pick, two firsts, a second, and a fourth. That is the ultimate. He is on his, he's on a credit card that he's like, hey, I might just walk away from the bill at the end of this anyway. It's always the risk when you have a coach who is coaching for his job who also is the person in charge of the roster. You don't have to worry about tomorrow you, because tomorrow you might not be employed. So that's the Clowney, the process was bad. Tunsil, they got better, but that is a drastic overpay.
But let's just walk away with this. Is Deshaun going to be more protected this year than
Absolutely.
He was last year?
Listen, you have a guy that can be a perennial All-Pro Pro Bowler in Laramie Tunsil. He's a guy that you can pencil into your roster for the next 10 to 15 years. He's going to provide stability to that offensive line. He's going to make not only himself better and Deshaun Watson better, but that entire offensive line better, because now you can slide the protection and leave him on that island. I think he's worth it. When you talk about a left tackle versus a good, not great, pass rusher, I think the great offensive tackle
they got better out every time. The 2019 season.
And that's what it's all about. This league is wide open. This season is wide open.
Sure.
The AFC is wide open.
But lastly, just real quick, you mentioned him be there the next 10 to 15 years. Once again, in the infinite wisdom of Bill O'Brien, in doing the trade, he didn't agree to a contract extension. You don't think Laramie Tunsil is going to have ultimate leverage over this team when they traded two firsts, a second for him, and don't have a contract in place? I'm happy for Deshaun. I feel badly for my friends in Houston who the team might have mortgaged its future to save Bill O'Brien's job.
Texans need a general manager. Coming up.
I'm available.
Are the Cowboys, because you guys are probably both up for that. Are the Cowboys' frustrations
with Mike Mayock can get the job.
Worse, hurt.
That's
Jenna.
On first things first.
I mean.
Yeah, I get the career path. Uh-huh. First things first, general manager.
Uh-huh. Exactly.
Hey, guys, this is Jenna Wolf. I'm here to tell you about Noom. Some people think that all diet and weight loss plans are the same, but that's because they haven't tried Noom. Noom is a new, totally different approach to losing weight and getting healthy that uses psychology and small goals to help you change your habits, making it easy to lose the weight and keep it off for good. Noom combines the power of technology with real human support, offering as little or as much help as you want along the way. And since Noom is an app, it's always with you and easy to use, which makes it super easy to stay on track and reach your goals. It's just as simple to get started. Go online, answer a few quick questions, and they'll create a personalized program just for you. Noom can help you lose your old way of thinking about food and dieting. So what do you have to lose? Visit Noom.com/podcast, Noom.com/podcast, and start your 14-day trial today. Change your habits, change your mind, change for good with Noom.
Back here talking Packers with Bart Scott and Nick Wright. Aaron Rodgers, like Tom Brady, has got a plan for how much longer he wants to play football. Implementing that plan is the tricky part. At 35 years old, Aaron sees another 10 years in him.
10 years.
But the Packers missed the playoffs the last two seasons. So that 10-year plan better come with some urgency. Here's A-Rod on the Rich Eisen Show laying out the perfect picture end to his career.
In the Super Bowl when I'm 45 and right off into the sunset.
Nice. Do you envision yourself playing deep into your 40s if you can?
We'll see. I mean, I envision playing as long as my body feels good and I have, you know, the love for the game that that I do right now. You know, that still fuels me and still a passion, and I still love the daily grind and the practice and the preparation. And if I can give everything to the team in that manner, then and my body feels good, I'm going to keep rolling.
All right, Nick, assuming that he does love the game, he feels like he wants to be out there, all of the things that he said, is the window closing on Aaron Rodgers to win another Super Bowl?
It's not closing, but this year is going to be critical in determining how open it still is. So maybe I should say it's certainly not closed, but is it slowly closing, or were the last 2 years you know, one is bad luck with the broken collarbone when the team was really good. The other one is a little bit of bad luck with the knee injury, plus the bad relationship with Mike McCarthy, maybe bad roster building by the former GM Ted Thompson. I have been of the belief that most of what has happened in Green Bay does not fall on the right arm of Aaron Rodgers. This year, though, will be very telling in that. And I believe the window is still wide open. In fact, I believe the Packers are going to play in the Super Bowl this year. But if they have a 9-7 season, squeak into the playoffs or miss the playoffs again, then with the advantage of hindsight, looking back, we might say, oh, that window was wide open briefly and closed pretty quickly, because quarterbacks, as good as Aaron Rodgers are, don't miss the playoffs three straight years in their prime unless there are extenuating circumstances like Drew Brees missed three straight years when the defense was just an absolute train wreck. So either if they miss the playoffs this year, either he's not as good as we think he is, I don't think that's the case, or he's no longer in his prime. And if he's no longer in his prime, then the Super Bowl window is, of course, closing. I think it's none of the above. I think they are fine. I think he's going to be good with LaFleur, and I think they're going to go to the Super Bowl. But this year will be incredibly critical on determining if I'm right about that.
This year is important for his legacy because he ran a Super Bowl-winning coach off, a guy who's never, you know, who had very few losing seasons. Yep. You know, and this is more about Aaron and his ability to step up, because now they're, I think, they finally went out and said, you know what, we need to take some food, some stuff off his plate. Let's go and build a defense around him. They didn't bring Clay Matthews back. They started to turn the page, bringing Za'Darius Smith in, drafting Rashawn Gary the two previous years, Jaire Alexander, building on the outside. Preston Smith as well. Yep. So I think they're going to try and win the ugly way. They still don't really have a great running back. I thought Shady would have been great for them as well, you know, his skill set. But it's time for Aaron Rodgers to get his second, because out of all the quarterbacks in the NFL, he's the one that we've surprised the most about, that he's not even been in another Super Bowl to try and win one. So that division is still, I think, wide open. I think that the Bears take a step back. I can't imagine the Bears being able to get that, generate those many turnovers, new defensive coordinator, and I'm not a big believer in Mitch Trubisky. Kirk Cousins, I think they're going to beat each other up a little bit. But I'm not overly concerned that if they get in as a wild card that they can't make noise. But it's really important that he gets in and he elevates, because this is the season that before they have to start writing more checks for some of the young talent that they have. So he's taking a big piece of the pie. So now he's going to have to elevate this team and try and get them over the hump within the next couple of years before they have to break this thing down again.
And the other element for the Packers is, what type of offense do they want to be? Because you mentioned their upgrades on defense. No matter what type of offense you are better with a better defense. Let's just assume the defense is better, because not just personnel, but also defense was really bad the second half of last year. Yeah. I think they would have been better with the same guys, much less the money and the draft picks they spent. But what type of offense will they be under Matt LaFleur? With the Titans, Matt LaFleur was as run-heavy as any team in this league this side of Seattle. Now, how much of that was philosophy? How much of that was personnel? I would argue it was more the latter than the former, but they are going to be more run-heavy this year than they were last year. Last year, even in fourth quarters with leads, they refused to run the ball. Ran the ball in that situation less than just about any team in football. So the point I'm making is that I think Rodgers recognizes that could be to my benefit. But when you're as talented as him, and when for so long the team's success has come and gone with how well you've played, I'm not worried about his relationship with LaFleur personally. But professionally, is Aaron going to be okay with, you know what, we're going to run the ball drastically more than we did last year, if for no other reason than to keep him healthy into the late
season.
But
he's got to be all in if you trust in that relationship on and off. And if that's part of what's involved, which is running more, then he's going to have to do it. All right, we got to take a break. Coming up, will the Dallas Cowboys' frustrations with Zeke boil over into the season? Next on First Things First. Welcome into First Things First. I'm Jenna Wolf. That's Bart Scott. In for Chris Carter. Brian Westbrook is here with us.
Chocolate
Nick
drop.
Wright, you know Nick. Chocolate drop.
Good to see you guys.
Good to see you as well, Brian.
He was going to come up with something.
That's my dog.
Great to have you here, both of you. Lots to get to today. Rumors and reports were out there that the Cowboys were close to wrapping up contract talks with Ezekiel Elliott as recently as, what, 15 hours ago? But Yahoo's Charles Robinson is reporting the opposite now, that the team is, quote, frustrated with the latest exchange with Zeke's camp. So with week one now just 6 days away, with the Cowboys set to face off against the Giants, we go back to the drawing board. Brian Westbrook, who needs a deal more here, Ezekiel Elliott or the Dallas Cowboys?
I think the truth probably is they need each other. But when you're talking about a team that has one of the best running backs in the league, the Dallas Cowboys need Ezekiel Elliott. The truth is this. Every team in the league goes out of their way to try to establish their identity every single season. The Dallas Cowboys, for the last three seasons, their identity has been run the football down your throat, run, 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 and then pass the ball just a bit. The only teams in the NFL that don't need that type of identity, a running identity, is a team with a great quarterback play, dominant quarterback play. And we have not seen that yet. We haven't seen Dak Prescott be that dominant quarterback that the Dallas Cowboys want him to be, that they expect him to be with the new offensive coordinator in Kellen Moore. I think that Dak is going to be better. Can he be dominant enough to make up for what they're going to lose in Zeke if he doesn't come back pretty soon? I'm not sure he's there yet.
Ezekiel Elliott's their best offensive player. He's their best defensive player because he controls the flow of the game. He limits the possessions. Dallas Cowboys has led the league in time of possession since Dak has been in the league almost. Since Ezekiel has been in the league. And he's a tremendous pass catcher of the ball as well. So you take that element out, then that puts more on everybody else on your team. Understanding that you have, you know, a couple of easy opponents the first couple of games, but things get harder at the end. And it's important that within the NFC that you win your division, because it's not a guarantee that you're going to get that wild card, because that the NFC is deep. Right. We know the NFC South with Carolina.
Three good teams.
The
South and North both have three viable playoff contenders. Yes.
Right, so it's no guarantee that if you don't win the division, we know that Philadelphia is a handful as well. So it's important that they get him in there. And it's not so much the best thing about Zeke that I appreciate the most as a former blitzing linebacker is his ability to pass protect. And we've seen Pollard early in the season, already in the preseason, have some hiccups, and Dak Prescott is your second most important player because he touches the ball every play. And if he can't pass protect, then he can't stay upright, then Dak is going to start selling balls over the middle.
So here's the reason why, to me, it's very clear the Cowboys need to get a deal done more than Zeke does. There's no world that exists where Zeke does not eventually get his money. Mm-hmm. Now, it could be a difference of about 10% between whatever Zeke's asking for, what the Cowboys' last best offer is. So for Zeke, that's real money. Of course, it's maybe $1 million, $1.5 million per year, maybe up to $5-6 million guaranteed. But for Zeke, this thing ends with him becoming, at worst, the second highest paid running back in the history of football. The Cowboys' side of it is, the difference is when Zeke gets there, are you 0-0? Are you 0-1? Are you 1-2? Is your 2019 season, where they looked at, the Cowboys looked at their 2018 season, looked at free agency in the draft and said, you know what? We're going to be judicious with our picks, especially because we've just traded away a first for Amari Cooper. We're going to be judicious with our money. We're going to spend a little bit on Randall Cobb. We're going to spend a little bit on Robert Quinn. We're going to bring back Jason Witten, but for the most part, we think the team we had last year, particularly the second half of last year, is good enough. A year more of Dak progressing, hopefully a full year of Dak and Amari together, good enough to not only make the playoffs, but make a run potentially to the Super Bowl. None of that is realistic without Ezekiel Elliott. And I would argue none of that's realistic without winning the division. I don't think Dak Prescott can go on the road and win three straight road games, three straight playoff games. That's what you have to do as a wild card team. You're going to be on the road every round of the playoffs. So it starts with winning the division. So if you start off giving a game away because you're 0-1 because you lost to the Giants, which you shouldn't have, and I'm not saying the Cowboys can't beat the Giants without Zeke, but their chances go down substantially. Well, in the NFL, man, people know this, obviously. It ain't baseball. It's not a series you can throw away. This is an enormous part of your season immediately. Back-to-back divisional games where you are favored, where you should win, to go into those games with a hand tied behind your back because your best player's not out there is enormously risky. So who needs to get a deal done quickly? The Cowboys. Gazeek. And chilling in Cabo is getting paid at some point no matter what. What position are the Cowboys in when he finally shows up?
Well, he's not going to be ready to play. I mean, and he'll go out there and play. To me, you're not giving Zeke 25 carries, his usual 25 carries, when he comes right back. That would be foolish.
Does it depend when he comes back this week?
Well, I mean,
Is there a day you need him signed by? Otherwise, he's not playing in that first
probably
game?
Probably by Tuesday or Wednesday, you know, tomorrow, the next day. Because at the end of the day, he knows the plays. He's going to run the football, hand him the ball, and let him go. To me, I would be concerned about his conditioning. I would also be concerned. My first year, I played in San Francisco. I went in there in the middle of camp. I played the first preseason game, which was a week later. Pulled my hamstring right away.
Soft tissue.
It just happens right away, especially for running backs. And if you pull your hamstring early on in the season, you're not back for it. You're over. So right. At that point, and so you don't want to lose that type of leverage. To me, the other thought is this. Jason Garrett should be pounding on that Jerry Jones' door saying, get my guy back there.
No extension.
All the guys on that football team, on that roster, have went into this season saying, we have a chance, a legitimate chance of winning the NFC East and potentially competing for the Super Bowl. We can't compete without 20.
I just want to follow up with one quick thing. My apologies. You mentioned about his workload when he first comes in. So if he signs at the end of this week, if he signs Friday, none of us think he'll play week one. Yeah. But then you're saying, having played the spot, that even then in week two, he's on a pitch count.
I would be. Right. I mean, if I'm Jason Garrett,
so now you're talking about week three, maybe week four,
right. Yeah.
Before you get, even if he gets signed this week, before you get the Ezekiel Elliott we're used to seeing, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. Because again, you can't risk losing him for 4 or 5 weeks. You can't risk that. That's the biggest thing. You put him on a pitch count early just to bring him back slowly. But this is why these things should have got done 2 weeks ago. That's the most important
thing. How did we get here? A couple weeks ago, we sat here talking about who was going to get signed first, Dak Prescott, Amari Cooper, Ezekiel Elliott, assuming Jalen Smith got signed first. Well, now the season is starting. None of them are signed. We all assume that the quarterback would be signed before the start of the season, or at least their best player in Ezekiel Elliott.
Well, the squeaky wheel gets the oil, right? So, like, I think they wanted to get Dak done first, and knowing that they had time for Ezekiel Elliott, and Ezekiel Elliott was like, oh, excuse me, I'm not showing up unless you get my money. Everybody else has been good soldiers. But, you know, it was important for Ezekiel to step up because this is the best leverage that he's going to have because they have Super Bowl aspirations. And if he didn't speak up now, then he would probably be third or fourth on that list. And, you know, you risk as a running back every time he has 400 touches, he's getting hit 400 times. And you don't know by who and how many. You know, the other guys can have plays and they're not getting injured. So it is important for Ezekiel to stand up and try and get his money now, because if he didn't get it now, he wasn't going to get it. And every time he touches the ball, he risks, you know, getting injured and not being able to get his long-term guarantee.
But the other element, Jenna, to your point about them not getting these deals done with any of these guys, these deals done early, is take what the Eagles did for a moment. I think everyone recognizes the Eagles are a very well-run franchise. Howie Roseman does a wonderful job there. I think when a lot of us first saw Carson Wentz, $32 million a year, all that money guaranteed. Wow, a guy that hasn't completed a whole season. Howie Roseman saw what the quarterback market was becoming.
Where it was going.
And said, listen, they obviously think they have a Super Bowl contending team this year. Think Wentz can be an MVP candidate this year. If we wait, does that $32 million become $38 million? Yeah. Does that keep going up? The Cowboys, I argue they should wait a full year on Dak. It doesn't look like they're going to do that. But the Cowboys have waited. They also waited on Amari. And guess what happened while they're waiting on Amari? The Michael Thomas resets the wide receiver market.
Right.
Hulu is about to reset it again. There's going to be more quarterbacks signed as well, but potentially before Dak's there. And now all of a sudden, we looked at Dak's, the reports that Dak wants north of $35 million as insane. Well, let's see what the market is. Like, I wouldn't pay Dak. And again, you might say, well, Amari Cooper's not going to get Julio money. Fine. But I guarantee you, Amari Cooper thinks he should get Michael Thomas money. And so this is what happens here. Like, they waited on DeMarcus Lawrence, and now they waited a year. Franchise tag can wait a year. You can wait and get more information. I think that is smart in a lot of cases. But there are the teams that go early, if you're right, you get your guy way cheaper than if you wait and make him prove it. It's a risk the Rams are running.
Yeah.
The Rams are saying, Goff, go prove it to us. If he has a great year, if they go back to the Super Bowl, that's going to be a $37, $38 million a year player when Wentz went one pick after him, just went for 32.
Hurt him with Gurley, though.
Yeah.
Well,
the other part about the thing, and I think you're making a great point, is that if Zeke is not there early on, and let's say Dak just goes out and has a great season, that 35 number goes up a little bit higher. You have an opportunity to pay your running back, pay him a couple bucks. You're going to need him anyway. You've already admitted that you need him for the playoffs. So to me, that loses leverage right there. I think Jerry Jones misplayed his hand totally. You have to pay your running back, get your best player in camp, and then allow the other guys who are already there, allow them to play it out if that's what you want to do.
Who are the first couple games?
It goes the Giants. Giants at Washington, home from Miami. It's the softest three-game stretch of their schedule. Yep. Then week four, you're at New Orleans. Week five, you're home for Green Bay. You got to be 3-0 at a worst-case scenario, 2-1.
I don't think that Giants game is a guaranteed win for them.
I don't either. Think anyone does.
And any road divisional game, which is week two at Washington, anything you can get happen. Beat.
Right.
And they're not going to be starting their rookie yet. So Washington, I think one of the reasons we think they're going to be bad is because Haskins is going to come in at some point, rookie growing pains. Your guy, Case Keenum, has shown he can win a couple games in this league. He's going to be the starter in week two. Like, that's – they're just – they're playing a dangerous game.
And if you're going to put Zeke on a pitch count, then you want to get him in there, especially before that fourth game this week.
Got to get him stretched.
All right, take a break. Coming up, does Jadeveon Clowney give the Seahawks the edge over the Rams? Clowney is his guy. That's next on First Things First.
Okay, quick math. The less your business spends on operations, on multiple systems, on delivering your product or service, the more margin you have and the more money you keep. Obvious. But with higher expenses on materials, employees, distribution, and borrowing, everything costs more. So, to reduce costs and headaches, smart businesses are graduating to NetSuite by Oracle. NetSuite is the number one cloud financial system, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, HR into one platform and one source of truth. With NetSuite, you reduce IT costs because NetSuite lives in the cloud with no hardware required, accessed from anywhere. You cut the cost of maintaining multiple systems because you've got one unified business management suite. And you're improving efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. Over 37,000 companies have already made the move. So do the math. See how you'll profit with NetSuite. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF. netsuite.com/FTF.
Welcome back. We'll get to Russell Wilson in a second, but first, a couple of plays from over the weekend. Oregon lost a thriller to Auburn. But for the Ducks, Justin Herbert found Spencer Webb for the night's grab, then makes like Allen Iverson with a little step over.
That was a much better throw than Justin Herbert, than for Justin Herbert, than maybe the worst Hail Mary that's ever been thrown in history.
Wait, did it go in the stands?
I mean, that would have been out of the back of a CFL end zone, but it's a great little just bully ball right there. Get off me, son.
Just go up
13.
The top of him, push him down to the ground.
Look out
for a second.
That's
so step over him. That's disrespectful.
That's going to be disrespectful in the film room when you watch that on the defensive end.
Indiana Ball State, the Cardinals, Justin Hall taking the reverse.
I don't remember you doing a lot of that.
No.
A little casual hurdle.
It's all fun and games. You get down, BB.
When you have the ball in your hand, the last thing you want to do is leave your feet for this long. That's a great jump, but wow. That's
Ball
scary,
State.
Scary landing.
Fighting Jason Whitlock's out there, pulling off her high hurdles. I don't know if my man Whitlock could pull off the high hurdle, but I know he was happy with this play.
Didn't David
Saturday.
Letterman go
Can he
off?
Get off the ground?
Oh, Eastern Washington, Washington Huskies, Aaron Fuller making the one-handed catch with the ballerina toe tap. Nice touchdown.
That's what you want to see out of your wide receiver. Those are the things that flash the NFL teams. Can a guy go up and get it in the end zone? Most important play in the NFL is going to get the football. Love that right there.
And that's a great college football touchdown.
That's
because
right.
Because in the NFL, obviously, it don't count. But in college, it does. That's spectacular.
Doesn't get much better than that.
If my man Chris Carter's out here, he'd be talking about them gloves, man. It ain't the gloves, it's the kids.
On to the Seahawks now. And the trade that shook up the NFL on Saturday, Seattle acquiring former first overall pick and three-time Pro Bowl defensive end Jadeveon Clowney from the Texans. The Seahawks, in return, give Houston a third-round pick and two players. I will let you decide the winners and losers of this one. Let's ask the defensive expert on our set. Bart, who's the best team in the NFC West, the Seahawks or the Rams?
I'm still going to go with the Rams. I mean, they're still explosive on offense. I still get a lot of concern about their ability to protect Russell Wilson, who I think was sacked the third most last year by anybody, if I check my data right here. He was sacked 51 times last year. You know, Russell LeCun has, I believe, blood clots, so he's not going to be available. So that means a lot of Russell Wilson handing the ball off. Last year, I believe they ran the ball more than anybody in the league. They have Schottenheimer, who was with me, so I know how he can get as far as running the ball over and over again. They're going to have to win ugly. They're going to have to win ugly. That's why I think adding Jadeveon Clowney gives them a better chance, because they're going to have to win those grind out one or two possessions, beat you in the third quarter, beat you down type of games. Russell Wilson's going to have to run around and be magical early in the season.
Well, I think the Rams probably are still the best team in the division. You have a team that saw last year, you can't run Todd Gurley into the ground early on in the season. Then if you do that, you won't be able to use him in the latter stages of the season when they needed him to be
at
effective.
All.
Yeah, at all. And so they needed him at that point. I think they'll be much more smart about that. I think Jared Goff matures another year. I think this team, the Rams, they still score a bunch of points. Now, on the other side.
Cooper Kupp coming back, too.
Yeah, they're getting the receivers back. I mean, they're in a good position. When you look at the Seattle Seahawks, defensively, they're nasty. They can get after you. Bobby Wagner, I believe he's probably the best linebacker in the league. He does a lot of things that linebackers just aren't able to do. Physical, he's fast. He can cover a lot of ground. I think when you add Clowney, this just puts that defense over the top. I think he's an edge rusher. He's an elite edge rusher. He can stop the run as well. All good things for the Seahawks. I still don't think they're better than the Rams, though.
I had the Seahawks winning the division before this trade. I obviously love this trade for the Seahawks' perspective. They get Jadeveon Clowney. Even if you think he's not number one overall pick worthy at this point in his career, he is a guy who has proven to be a very, I would say very good, you would probably just say good NFL player. And to get him for a third round pick, that doesn't cost you anything this year.
Right.
Mingo, who was going to get cut, according to the reports in Seattle, and one other inside linebacker, is a theft. You think about it. For Frank Clark, you can say he's better than Clowney, but set it aside, not drastically so. For Frank Clark, they got from Kansas City a first, then a second. They replace him with that first-round pick. They draft L.J. Collier, a defensive end, pass rusher. They bring in Clowney and essentially move up in the draft. They bring in Ziggy Ansah. That front seven, all of a sudden, Ziggy Ansah, Jadeveon Clowney, whatever you get from the rookie, oh, yeah, K.J. Wright, and oh, yeah, maybe the best inside linebacker in football, Bobby Wagner. Then on the other side of the ball, what you have is, I think, the most underrated quarterback in football, Russell Wilson, a top five quarterback each and every year, even though nobody talks about him that way. Now, this side of Jacksonville, they might have the worst receiving core in football. Yeah. The loss of Doug Baldwin's big. Tyler Lockett was spectacular for them last year, but it's Tyler Lockett and a bunch of rookies, bunch of question marks. But I think the Rams take a massive step back this year. You mentioned Todd Gurley on a pitch count. Last year, they're 11-0 when he has 15 or more carries, 2-4 when he has less than 15 carries. Who is Todd Gurley going to be this year? How good is Jared Goff now that the Patriots seem to expose he and the Sean McVay scheme at least a little bit? Not a ton, but at least a little bit. And I think Seattle, since Pete Carroll and Russell Wilson have been together, their worst year was 2 years ago, 9-7. Last year was year two of the rebuild. Went 10-6 and made the playoffs. I don't know why people expect them to go backwards from there, even though they lost Baldwin. You mentioned the offensive line. They still have Dwayne Brown, who's been very good. A guy that, by the way, is so fun. The Texans, the whole offensive line problem started when they traded Dwayne Brown to Seattle because they didn't like Dwayne Brown's politics down in Houston. So they gave him away for pennies on the dollar. And now they've been trying to fix that mess ever since. But Clowney, I think he's going to be spectacular for Seattle. I think he's going to be more to his natural position, not a 3-4 outside backer, 4-3 defensive end, better system around him. Can't say better players, doesn't have J.J. Watt around him, and contract year. They agreed as part of this trade to not franchise him again, so he knows he's going to be a true unrestricted free agent next year. I think Clowney's going to be unleashed. I think he's going to have his first double-digit sack season, which I know you're big on the fact that he hasn't had one. I think Seattle's going to win 11 games and win the division.
The question for Seattle is, can they outscore the Rams? That's the big question. Can they score enough, or can their defense be good enough to slow the Rams down?
Cooper Kupp, make it
a 20-25-point game.
Cooper Kupp, you're underrating Cooper Kupp and what he brings. I mean, he's a slot-catching machine. He's a guy
that was ACL last year. And
he can catch 100 balls from the slot. And, I mean, he's Jared Goff's, you know, outlet. So I think maybe they spread it out a little bit more and they use a lot less of Gurley and really go through Goff. Remember, they're talking to him 15 seconds within the clock, so they're giving him the answers to the test before. A guy like Cooper Kupp helps you win a lot more.
Are you sold on Goff? I know you're not as sold. CC is sold. Are you not?
I'm not. Anytime that, you know, at some point you got to learn how to read the safeties, the inversion of the safeties post-snap. And I feel like they still have the training wheels on them. That says a lot about them because they haven't given him the keys to the car. He's still riding with the driver's training guy.
Last year, there were teams that were able to slow them down by saying, we're just going to drop back and play zone. And Jared Goff had to be disciplined enough to take the checks down, the smaller, you know, the shorter plays. He wasn't disciplined enough to do that, especially the latter part of the season. This year, he has to learn that. I think Sean McVay and that offense, they learned that this year.
year.
To your point, just real quick, the one thing Goff has going for him, in the NFC, the Rams might have the best receiving core. Cooks, Woods, Robert Woods came out this week and said, I think I'm the most complete receiver in the NFL. So Brandon Cooks, yeah. Robert Woods, Cooper Kupp, all three guys exactly know their roles. Seattle might have the worst receiving core in the NFC, as we just talked about. So in that regard, the Rams have a decided advantage. The other, I don't think.
So you just talked yourself out of it.
No. I was just making the devil's advocate point. I don't think they have a coach. I really like Sean McVay. He's not Pete Carroll. The best coach.
They have Wade Phillips.
The best coach quarterback combination in that division is in Seattle. And with the addition of Clowney, I wonder if the best defense in that division all of a sudden might be in Seattle as well.
Thank you for listening to the First Things First podcast. Remember, leave us a review and tell us what you think. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts and catch us on FS1 Monday through Friday, 6:30 a.m. Eastern. For Chris Carter and Nick Wright, I'm Jenna Wolf. So long, everybody.